The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're joined by Brian Handley, author of The Impact of the Troubles on the Republic of Ireland, 1968 to 1979, which is a really interesting approach to take to history because, Brian, I suppose we've had so much written about the impact of the Troubles which broke out 50 years ago. You've decided to focus on south of the border. Why so?
I think it had a profound, the conflict had a profound effect on down here, so to speak. So much so that people often don't recognise that. I mean, this year is the 50th anniversary of the outbreak of the Troubles. And I suppose people don't realise that in 1968, 1969, there was a wave of emotional solidarity with Northern Nationalists, with demonstrations of thousands of people in Dublin and across the state demanding intervention. Thousands of people contributed to funds for refugees and for displaced Northern Nationalists. And over the next 4 or 5 years, this reoccurred whenever the crisis blew up in the
such
north.
As Bloody Sunday, yes. Riots at the British Embassy, yeah. For example.
Yeah, and I think, again, people are aware that the British Embassy was burnt down, but it was burnt down 3 days after Bloody Sunday. The day after Bloody Sunday, you had essentially a general strike across the 26 counties where thousands of people walked out of work in protest. Again, thousands demanded that the government intervene or do something concrete to aid Northern Nationalists. You had all kinds of, I think, you know, an estimated 1 million people took part in some form of protest on the National Day of Mourning itself, which was the Wednesday, which was then the evening when the embassy itself was burnt down. But the burning of the embassy is just one of a whole multitude of ways in which people
protested. How did that escalate things in the deteriorating relationship between Britain and Ireland? If you burn another country's embassy, that's almost regarded almost as an act of war. What happened in Bloody Sunday to many people in the Republic was an act of war. How come Britain and Ireland didn't end up getting into really serious hostilities?
Well, for a period before and after Bloody Sunday, I mean, the popular mood was very much one of solidarity with Northern Nationalists. And that put intense pressure on the then Fianna Fáil government to do something more than to intervene, essentially. And this caused a crisis in the government itself.
Was that because of a degree of powerlessness, as they felt that militarily we couldn't actually do anything to go over the border to help nationalists?
I think what people in the southern establishment, so to speak, felt in 1970-1971 was that the settlement of 1920-21 was unravelling. That really, for years, people had talked about our people in the north, desire for United Ireland, the condition of Northern Nationalists. But now all this had become a reality again. And many people felt partition itself was inevitably going to come to an end. Rhetorically, almost every political actor in the South favoured a United Ireland. But now faced with the reality of what that might mean, the reality was thousands of people seeking refuge in the South, for example.
And of course, the enormous political story of that era as well was the arms trial and the sacking of two government ministers, including Charlie Haughey, who less than a decade later was to become Taoiseach. I mean, just how much did that drive Irish society apart?
I think what's interesting, I suppose, is the popular context, because a lot of people have concentrated on what did or what didn't happen at cabinet meetings. But you have to realise that the mood across the state was very much one of, you know, what are we going to do for our people in the north? And that mood lasted, I think, really until the summer of 1972. And then you begin to see a shift.
Yeah, why did it shift?
It's the violence in the north as it intensified. I think it's very interesting to see attitudes shift. As long as Northern Nationalists were seen primarily as the victims of violence, people were generally sympathetic. Now, Northern Nationalists for 50 years felt abandoned, and they're not likely to feel very sympathetic to this argument. But once by the summer of 1972, the campaign, it was two IRAs active at the time, but the Republican campaign begins to intensify, particularly with car bombings. You begin to see the South begin to withdraw. In the aftermath of Bloody Sunday, for example, 2 weeks after Bloody Sunday, the official IRA bombed the parachute regiment's headquarters at Aldershot, killed 7 people, including 5 cleaning staff. That really causes a wave of revulsion in the South, because there's a sense that we've lost the high moral ground now. And I think that the Republican movement didn't realise until much later that its campaign, which it thought was going to result in victory in 1972, was too much for the South to grasp. Whether it was true or not, many people in the South would have felt that the IRA, which they honoured, the IRA of the 1920s wouldn't have done the type of things that the IRA was doing.
And it's interesting that you finished in 1979, because that was the year in which you would have had on one day the atrocities, the murder of Mountbatten, Mullaghmore, and the Warren Point slaughter of 18 soldiers as well. I think for many people, weren't they, that was actually almost a nadir in the Republic, that they believed that this savagery just could not be condoned in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it's interesting, though, there's always a disconnect in some senses between outright condemnation of the IRA and then those who feel that the IRA are perhaps justified in some tactics. And I mean, I was very young at the time, but I remember family arguments myself about that incident. And while the assassination of Mountbatten, and particularly the killing of the children who were on his boat, was seen as absolutely outrageous, a lot of people felt that the killings of the parachute regiment soldiers was different. And you even find
a sort of
that,
a form of act of war?
Yes, that you know, whatever about killing soldiers, which may have some justification and which people may have some understanding of, the killing of civilians or the killing of very elderly members of the British establishment was seen as beyond the pale. And you see that right throughout the 1970s. I mean, some IRA activities are condoned or at least, you know, understood, while others are unacceptable. Activities by the IRA in the Republic itself always seen generally as unacceptable as well.
Particularly when Gardaí or Defence Forces personnel died, because I suppose that's something that's often forgotten as well. The IRA would have had a major campaign of bank robberies to finance themselves conducted in the South at the time.
Yeah, I mean, one of the impacts of the Northern Crisis is a huge rise in armed crime. In the early 70s, the official IRA and then the provisionals began to carry out bank and post office raids. And you went from having very little armed crime in Southern Ireland to suddenly by 1973, 1974, having armed robberies on a daily basis. And this intensified the sense of fear. You had people shot during bank raids. You had Gardaí and civilians killed in bank raids. And then you had ordinary criminals also begin to carry out raids themselves, because this it became apparent that you could actually get away with this. And this intensified, I think, the sense of fear and the sense that the Northern Crisis was spilling over. But also another factor, I think, which is sometimes forgotten, is that you also had, at least until 1976, a fairly constant stream of loyalist attacks in the South.
Well, I was just about to say, the fear of war coming to us, whatever about the IRA, the fear that you would get more things like the Dublin-Monaghan bombings of 1974, I think that's what terrified an awful lot of people, that they could live with what was going on in the six counties because it didn't affect those of us south of the border.
Yeah, and I think, again, for people who live in the North, this is often, you know, a hard thing to understand, and I understand them feeling uncomfortable about it, but the over 50 people were killed in loyalist attacks in the Republic between 1972 and 1976, the most devastating being Dublin and Monaghan in May 1974. And the reaction to those, again, is very, very interesting, because unlike after Bloody Sunday, where you've got a wave of anger at the British government, after loyalist bombings, you tend to have resignation, fear, a desire to really just shut this thing off. And that's echoed in, again, in official statements. So there was no National Day of Mourning after the Dublin-Monaghan bombs, but there was Bloody Sunday. The government actually discussed seriously about whether or not they'd fly flags at half mast, you know, and they very much blamed everybody who's in favour of violence for those bombs. So I think that affected how the public, you know, reacted.
Did it mean, particularly in the 70s, that a lot of our political discourse in this country didn't work on a left-right economic divide? It was almost on the basis of whether you actually had a sort of Republican sympathy or whether you believed all Republican activity was wrong and you had a degree of sympathy and understanding for unionists and loyalists.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the early 70s, there's very few people who would have regarded themselves as sympathetic to the unionist position at all. And then by the end of that decade, you have prominent individuals like Conor Cruise O'Brien beginning to argue that there has to be a wholesale re-evaluation of the way we understand Irish history. As a historian myself, I've been, you know, for years dealing with the results of that, where, you know, there was an argument that essentially too much of a nationalist understanding of Irish history contributed to sympathy for the IRA. Now, I think that's very simplistic. But certainly by the mid-1970s, anybody who expressed sympathy with Northern nationalists and who said that really there was a material basis to the IRA's campaign, whether or not they agreed with it, would often be labelled a provo. And it made it very difficult for there to be a rational discussion. And of course, you also had then, by the mid-70s, very strict censorship of radio and television. So
yeah, just remind people of that, because Section 31 would be anathema to many people now, but that was what we worked under. Well, before I was a working journalist, that was the way the broadcasters had to behave. Just explain how it worked.
Well, it was already in place since the 1960s that those who were in favour of what the authorities described as subversion could be barred from the airwaves. But it was still quite in flux in the early 70s. You did have Republican leaders interviewed on RTE. The Fianna Fáil government began to tighten that in 1972, and ultimately they sacked the RTE authority for defying them in December 1972. The election of the Fine Gael Labour government then in 1973 saw a further tightening. Section 31 essentially then outlawed a whole series of political parties and organisations from the airwaves, from radio or television, and they couldn't be interviewed under any circumstances, the most pertinent one being Sinn Féin.
And finally, you went to 1979, which I thought was interesting. Why did you cut off there? Because certainly things did shift when the hunger strikes of 1981, was it 81 they started?
Yes, yeah. Well, I suppose I wanted to end firstly because in 1979, you had the Mullagh Moor bombings and Warren Point, you had the election or the elevation of Charles Hogg to the Fianna Fáil leadership, which many people thought was going to signal a completely new relationship with Britain. And you also had the Pope's visit. And though it's forgotten
and
at the time,
and his appeal for peace. Yeah, and he couldn't go north of the border.
Yeah, he couldn't go north of the border, but he made a very direct appeal to the IRA. And I remember again the shock, my grandmother being shocked that the IRA disagreed.
Ignored the Pope.
You know, that they, she said, or sure, they can't be the IRA at all. You know, so you had this disconnect in people's minds with what they thought, you know, from their own understanding of Irish history, should have been the case. So there was so much more to talk about in the 1980s, I thought that would be a separate
study. That
would
be another volume for you. There's so much in this. Anyway, The Impact of the Troubles on the Republic of Ireland, 1968 to 79. Brian Hanley, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.